Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight in the middle of your black pants party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios on this Wednesday morning. Of course, it's Wednesday. You know who's joining me, Mr. Bill Cooksey. Bill, how are you, brother?
Good morning. I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day out. It's cooled off a little bit. We might not even have to swap mosquitoes when we go hunting next time.
You know, the interesting thing about that is, I just think it's a little too late. About this same time last year, I'll say this, we were down in the single digits around here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a mover.
It was awesome. Right now, as you know, anybody that follows Duck South on Facebook, it's kind of become a thing with me. Once a week, I'll post a screenshot of St. Louis weather. And when I looked at it this morning, I thought, man, I'd love to have their weather here. You know, they're down low to mid-20s at night all this week and mid-30s in the day. And that's January duck weather, that freeze-thaw line. And I take single digits, too, and that's really probably what it would take to get us any ducks at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, we're on the flip side of the equinox. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Like you and Bradley both have said, they're inching their way back. When these mm-hmm. days start getting longer, they're starting to inch back. It's not... They don't come south unless they absolutely have to once you get past that equinox. And just like you've said millions, maybe not millions of times before, but so many times on this podcast, that's why it's so important to get these early cold fronts.
Right. That's exactly right. And I may have said this before, but I think the farther south duck hunters live, the less they really understand what it takes to move these birds. And we're talking about, there's so many different duck populations and so many different things that trigger different migrations. But we're talking about the winter ducks, the mallards, the birds that have always migrated once it got ice and snow up north. Once the food was covered, they come down. And historically, you know, you could look at those snow lines from the 70s, 80s, and 90s and look at December snow lines, and they're going to be down, you know, into Missouri, well into Missouri on any average year. And this year it was above the Canadian border in December. So those birds have had no reason to move. They're the ones, they're typically very successful breeders because they'll be the first ones at the breeding ground in the spring. And that's a key to pulling off a good nest. And then we have these other populations of photo migrators that will trickle back north. And, the blue-winged teal is, you know, taxidermist friends, I'm sure you've had some tell you that nothing like turkey season for people to remember that blue-winged teal they shot in January.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are species. So before the FFL comes after me and says, wait a minute, we have ducks that don't even leave here until April. I know. And those are the ducks that come there in August and September.
it's been a frustrating year. And the thing about it is we have had so many frustrating years in the past that it seems that people are so quick to forget those years because we have so many good years.
Sure. It's human nature, and I get it, man. I'm so mad. We sit in duck blinds this year and figure out what to gripe about. I mean, because the people who hunt with me have heard it enough. None of them are going to say, well, I think they're being shortstop, because I pull out my phone and say, look at the friggin' weather. And so they have to acknowledge that. But we sit there and find other things. You know, man, that, you know, landowner's not taking care of this, and this is a problem, and that's a problem. And that's just what we do. And it's human nature to look for someone to blame. This year, there's not anyone to blame. So, no matter
duck hunters
who
and farmers are a lot alike. You spend a lot of time around farmers.
Yeah. Yeah. Same deal. The weather's always wrong. You know, it's just there's always something wrong, and we're going to gripe about it. And that's the way it is. That's half the fun. It's half the fun.
So because of this podcast, I have become friends with a lot of people that I normally would not become friends with on social media. Mm-hmm. And because of this podcast, people from the Great Lakes region, Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, I appreciate all of them listening. So I see the things that they post to social media because of my news feed. So in the past few days, I'll say this. I've seen multiple posts about losing fishing houses, with ice fishing. They've literally lost whole houses, these ice houses, fishing houses that fell through the ice because it's so thin.
Right. I've seen a lot of them say, like, you know, I've gotten ice fish 2 days this year, now I can put a boat in where we'd normally ice fish.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry, there's no reason. It's amazing. Be thankful if you have any ducks at all. If you go out this Saturday and you see and shoot one duck, be thankful because there's no reason for them to be down here.
Man, it has been a mild winter. I got to tell you this, though, Bill. Tell you a quick story. The reason Bill and I have this scheduled to record, we were about 10 or 15 minutes late. I said, Bill, let me finish up this phone call. I'm on. We'll jump on this podcast. So let me tell you a story, Bill.
Okay.
So, back in September, you know that I'm my brand, but I am every day a white dress shirt guy. I wear a white dress shirt every single day. I get picked on a lot about it, but so I am. So I found this new company that ordered my white non-iron dress shirts, throw them in the dryer, put them on, they're good to go. So I order some back in September, and this is why I was late. All right, so I didn't get those shirts for like a month. I call them up, I say, hey, I haven't got my shirts yet, blah, blah, blah. Well, sir, we'll get you some new ones out. They replace those four shirts that I ordered with four more. But this time, instead of sending it USPS, like the original ones came, they sent these UPS. Well, I got them 3 or 4 days later. So, over the next couple of months, I said, I've called them multiple times and said, hey, listen, I want to send these four shirts back to you. I could have been a dishonest person and just kept the shirts. And I'm not telling you this story to brag on my manners, but my code of the way I live. I'm not saying that to brag on myself. So I called him twice and said, listen, send me a shipping label. I'll send these up, these four that I just got, the original ones a couple of weeks after. I'll send them back to you. I know what it's like. I'm in business for myself. I never got the emails. So of the four original ones that I got, kind of stained them up, working on the farm, called them today and said, listen, I hadn't gotten the shipping labels to send them back. I hadn't even taken them out of the package. They're literally sitting in my closet, still in the original package. I just want to buy them from them.
Right.
I just want to buy them, you know, go on and send me a bill, I'll pay you for them.
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
They have no way for me to pay for those shirts. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, they proceed to get just outright rude with me about wanting to pay for shirts that I could have kept all along if I was a dishonest person.
Now, like, do they want you to send them back, or they just want them to disappear?
No, they want me to send them back. They're trying to figure out a way that I can pay for them.
Right.
Because they have no order, per se, mm-hmm. for them. There's no way to pay for them. Does that make sense?
Sure. You know, crazy things happen, Rocky, and I can say this from the Avery standpoint. You know, you get a company, I don't know what shirt company it was, but probably not Brooks Brothers or some big, well-known company, I assume. Not some monster old company that's had everything hit them over the years and figured it out. It's a younger company probably. And you get into these situations. I can remember at Avery, you change accounting software, trying to find something that manages things better and puts you in better positions. And you'd end up with this kind of a weird situation where there's no way in your system to do what you and the customer know is the most logical thing in the world. Yet the system won't allow it. And sometimes even you try to think outside the box and come up with something, and eventually that's what you do if you're allowed. And I obviously don't know the parameters this company sets on their customer service people, but you can end up in a bind because you don't, you know, these systems don't necessarily take every potential problem into account. And suddenly you got some poor guy sitting there on the phone or the computer, a customer service rep. Here are your guidelines. Here's the computer program. And you look at it and say, it won't allow me to do that. So you're stuck. And I can kind of see where the person is. It's not to justify it, but I've been through a few of these things where it's like, this won't allow us to do what we know is the best way to handle this. So,
just allow me to give you the money. Not a big deal. The thing is, I paid for it through PayPal. Every PayPal account has an email address attached to that PayPal. Just give me that email address. I'm going to send you this money.
Right.
Just, you know, it's that easy. It's that easy.
Well, I mean, I'm sure for them it's an inventory issue, which I would think you look at your system, you pretend you got the return shirts back, put them back in inventory, and then issue another order from you with payment. I would think that would work for them.
My whole deal with customer service, no matter who you call, this is my feeling about it, okay? When you say, hey, can I speak to your boss? Think 8 times out of 10, you never actually talk to the boss that's over them. You actually talk to the person that's in the little square next to them.
Sure. Unless it's something big, they're going to transfer you to another rep to see if they can handle it. And you know, a lot of times, you can end up with a personality conflict and both the customer and that rep getting nowhere, both of them being good people who are trying to do it right, but they don't jive. You give them to someone else and they speak the same language and they get to a desired result in a hurry. But when you don't, and you realize this person has no authority either, so it can be a frustrating experience. Lord knows, you know, if you're a human being over the age of 18, you've dealt with it somewhere in some capacity. So I'm just having been on both ends of it and having for years been kind of the last guy before it went to the owner of the company, which you didn't want it to go to the owner of the company. No one wants that. There should always be a way of handling it before it gets to that point. But having been that guy, I And you're usually dealing with a customer then who's at his wit's end, understandably so a lot of the time. And in this situation, for sure. I mean, you're trying to give them money. But I've watched too many situations inside where, you know, not just Vabery, but other places too, where a guy's sitting there and there's nothing in our book to allow us to do this. And unless he has a really good boss who's accessible and can make a quick decision, and that decision goes over, you know, no one questions it, it could be it can be brutal.
I forgot you were that guy. You know, in thinking about this story and telling it, and then I forgot you were that guy. You were that boss.
Well, I was the customer service manager for about 4 months at Avery before I became a sales manager. But, you know, from then on, I always would take customer service calls when it was necessary.
What deemed it necessary to go to you?
When someone just wasn't going to stop until it went to the top. When the customer service rep is saying, hey, I've done all I can for you. What would you have me do? I can't give you your money back. That was a big one. You know, we didn't sell direct, so a guy bought, whether it was a blind bag or a quick-set boat blind, bought something, he was dissatisfied, wanted to return it, or bought it broke, or whatever. You know, if it's a warranty situation or just a return, they'd want their money back. Well, we didn't get their money. We got half of it, basically, in general. So we never got the money to give it back to them. It's like, you'll have to take that back to the dealer. Well, I don't live there. And they won't issue a call to, or, you know, it's just, and when they can't talk through these issues with the customer and arrive at a resolution, well, someone else has to deal with it. And that was especially so if it was people who like spouting off on the internet, because I was kind of that guy who diluted that. When it was someone really rough, I was usually the one who went out and talked to them on open forums. So, you know, usually it's a customer not being willing to understand why the company has their policies in place.
And usually these policies are really good, and they flow really well to benefit not only the company but the customer to keep them satisfied.
Sure. You want to make it a streamlined process, make it as easy as on the customer as possible, but also to protect the company. Because some people, believe it or not, don't try to do the right thing. You know, they don't. You know, you have a one-year warranty on a product. Well, it's been 2 years. And the guy calls and says, well, but I didn't use it last year. I've only used it this year. Well, come on, man. You know, all we know is the date it was sold. And we have to have that policy or we'll go out of business because our margins aren't that big.
That's right.
But, you know, if you quadruple your cost on everything, sure, you can absorb a whole lot of returns, but it's you have those policies and you have to somewhat stick to them. But there's also a trick to trying to understand if a guy's, you know, giving you a line and trying to get away with something, which happens. It happens every day. Or if this guy's really in earnest and he didn't do anything wrong, it just kind of looks that way. And we ought to take care of him on this. And he'll be a good customer for life. And that's a tricky deal. And some people, I'm sure, will listen to this and say, well, you should treat them all the same. Well, they don't all treat you the same. And we watch good companies end up going out of business because of this sort of thing.
I see it all the time, especially in Duck South. I see people shouting from the rooftops particular customer service experience that they had. Do you think that some companies, I know this is going to sound nuts, do you think some companies have taken it just a little too far? And what I mean by that is, customers, from their viewpoint, think that they should get the same customer service when it comes to Rocky's Camo Shop versus Filton. Now, at Rocky's Camo Shop, they paid for $75 for a coat, and at Filton, they paid $400 for a coat. But they expect the same customer service from Rocky's Camo Shop, which he's getting his stuff made in China for nothing. But they expect Rocky's Camo Shop to have that same warranty, that same customer service that they get from the one where they paid $400. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy at all. And we can take that a step farther. The less people pay for something, they expect the same performance or similar performance and customer service for a $25 a dozen box of decoys versus a $150 box of decoys. They expect them to last just as long, the paint to be just as good. They understand they don't look as good on the outset, but they expect the same basic performance of the two, and the same with anything else. But the $150 a dozen decoys, they're going to take better care of than the $25 a dozen decoys. That just, it has become an obvious thing to me over the years. We used to laugh about it and say we should have made our decoys about 10 times this cost and then people wouldn't abuse them. And then they want to return them and get their money back after they did things to them they wouldn't do to an expensive item. In other words, that Filson coat, they're going to take better care of, at least for the first few years, until they realize this thing will really take some abuse. But yes, they want the same performance and the same customer service, yet pay a much lower cost, and they'll abuse it more because it was cheaper.
That story has nothing to do with me or anything that Duck South has put out there. I hope what we put out has been quality. I'm just saying that expectations are nuts. They are crazy.
Yeah, Sitka waiters, I have no doubt they are an exceptional product. No doubt about it. I don't have a pair. I haven't worn a pair. I've held them. I've looked at them. Even put a pair on one time just to see how they fit and all. No doubt they are an exceptional product. And I have no doubt whether the quality is better or not. Let's take quality out of the mix. Let's say the quality of them is the same as a pair of, breathable waders for $150 from Academy Sporting Goods. If the same guy got both pairs and was able to alternate, he's going to tear up those from Academy sooner than he's going to tear up those Sitka waders, because those Sitka waders, he won't run into a barbed wire fence, or if he comes up on one, he won't be careless crossing it, that sort of thing.
That is so much wisdom. I agree with you. I've never thought about it in that sense, but that is so much wisdom.
We all do it. We take better care of our pretty guns. I have a gun I love to shoot, but I don't take it out on nasty days because it's a pretty gun. Well, that's ridiculous. All I need to do is wipe it with oil afterwards, but it's what we do. But it's tough for a company to deal with it.
Well, hey, backtracking a little bit to your migration report. That thing was good. It was good.
Oh, did you like that?
Blind. Yeah. It was real good.
I had fun with that. You know, I dealt with a whole lot of crap on the internet over the years and had a lot of fun with it at the same time. It's obvious I enjoy corresponding with people more than a lot of folks in the outdoor world really do. But some of this stuff lately, for the first time ever, I've never put anyone on ignore on a forum. I finally put a guy on ignore here recently, and all over this migration stuff and some of the garbage that's being said by just a few people. And it really rubs me the wrong way when folks just spout, at best, half-truths, but mostly just outright lies as if they're true. And while we're all sitting here upset that it's a bad season, is a time where a lot of folks, you know what, he's right. We're getting screwed. And they grow this little bit of a movement based on lies and get lucky with a bad season or two in a row because of the weather. And it detracts from real conservation, from really helping the resource. And that ticks me off.
Here's what burns my ass. And I'll say ass. I don't care. This is what burns my ass. Right now, we are in the position with the liberal seasons that we have today because of great people at DU and Delta Waterfowl.
Mm-hmm.
A major driving force to what we have today. The liberal frameworks that we have today, the population of waterfowl we have today because of those people.
Mm-hmm.
That's what burns me up. Don't ever throw that crap in my face.
Yeah.
They're to blame. Yeah, they're to blame because of what we have. They can't control this weather. Give me a freaking break.
And, you know, there's weather aside. I mean, anyone who can't look at the weather and realize that's our issue this year, they really don't belong in the conversation. But let's go on to other things. I see this constantly cited. Louisiana is the original wintering ground. No. Louisiana is a major wintering ground. It's King Daddy. It definitely should be a number one wintering ground. Arkansas has always been number one for mileage. Mississippi and Tennessee have always been wintering grounds. So don't act like this is some new thing. Number two, they cite that in 1998, baiting law changed to allow people to flood standing crops. That's an outright lie. And I keep saying, then show me something, because I've never seen it in writing. And we hunted flooded standing crops since I was a little kid, because we'd have places in the bottoms that would flood before they got the crops out. It's always been legal. What changed in 98 was how they interpret, you have to either know or reasonably should have known a place is baited. And what that means is, if you get invited by a buddy to go hunting, or you go on a guided hunt, which a guy just got, I guess, busted again up in New England or somewhere in the Northeast, while he's still under probation for baiting. He's an outfitter, and he was baiting ponds and then taking hunters to them. And the hunters had no way of knowing there had ever been bait. This was all done underwater. He had quite a system. In the past, all the hunters who hunted there would get a ticket for baiting, despite they were paying to go hunt with this guy because he's an outfitter and they want to hunt that area. Or you go with your buddy and he had baited and you didn't know it. You know, you're old enough, and I'm definitely old enough. I've known people who got baiting tickets who there was no way in hell they could have known a place was baited. That changed.
Happens on duck hunts all the time. Changed.
That was the most un-American of our game laws. Anyone who thinks that was the way to do it is a fool. That's what changed. And if you're against that as a hunter, I'll clap the day you get your ticket, because it'll happen. Because if you hunt much, you've hunted over bait without knowing it. You've hunted close to a place. The guy behind you baits a hole. You're guilty by the old laws. And that's why that changed.
Well,
can you tell I get worked up?
Just a little, and that's fine. You know, it goes for years. Even I started duck hunting in 92 is when I started duck hunting. For years I hunted flooded standing crops because the water would... Did people intentionally flood back then? Yeah. There were a lot of people that did. Mm-hmm. Are there a lot more now? Yes, there are.
Yeah, as long as we have 60-day seasons, there will be. People are willing to spend more money when they have 2 months to hunt.
But the thing is, you go up and down the flyway. Here's what I want people to understand from my point of view, from talking to people all over the United States, all the time, every day, my phone's ringing. People in the Pacific Flyway are having the worst season ever. People in the mm-hmm. Central Flyway. Shelby Anderson's one of the biggest killers in the world. He is killing himself trying to kill geese and ducks right now. You know, up until 2 weeks ago in Nebraska, the absolute worst season ever. That is the honey hole of America. The best kept secret in duck hunting. The Mississippi Flyway, no matter how far you go, one of the worst seasons ever. And of course, the Eastern Flyway, the Atlantic Flyway, the Atlantic Flyway. I mean, they hadn't seen unbelievable duck hunting since the market days. I mean,
yeah. If we think it's bad in our flyway, it's really bad over there and has been for a long, long time.
Yeah, you know, that's the guys I respect. Those guys know. Those are a lot of the people that truly love duck hunting.
Yeah.
You know that there's no chance of seeing a wad of ducks, you know, flock into a break sitting in South Carolina. Your only shot for the day is probably going to be one wood duck, and that's just possible. Maybe. That's a maybe. You love the sport.
Right. Oh, no doubt. I mean, my hat's off to them because when someone tells me they drive, you know, 7 hours each way and they average about 8 ducks a year or something, I'd have to move. Yeah. Well, I did it once in my life. I moved just because of ducks. In 1991, I had taken a job in Johnson City and got up there in August. It's kind of funny. I got there the weekend of the Bristol race. And to move in, you know, and I was moving from California. So I get to Johnson City, Tennessee, the weekend of the NASCAR race, and I didn't follow NASCAR, so I didn't know anything about it. So I needed to get a hotel room for about a week while I found a place, or I had a place lined up, but I needed about a week before I could get into it. And the only hotel I could find with a vacancy was the Holiday Inn, and they had a suite. Now, I didn't make sweet money, but fortunately they gave me a good rate and I got it. And I ended up had a good wood duck season that year up there in East Tennessee. Killed several wood ducks, so that was cool. Started grouse hunting when that opened, and that was really cool because I'd never done it before. And then duck season opened. And after that first week, I drove to West Tennessee or Arkansas every week for the rest of that season, and by the middle of February, I had found a job back home and moved because I was not going through another duck season like that.
But overall, I want you people that's listening to this, overall, you're not alone in having a bad duck season. It is up and down every flyway.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, I had a decent from New Year's through Saturday. Sunday, we just never could get on them. But New Year's through Saturday, it was pretty good because the water was jumping so fast in the bottoms in Tennessee that it moved ducks. And if you could get out there and run until you found the right area, you could get under some and you could have a good hunt. But now the river's changed again. I hadn't been in a few days. I'd be scared to death to go down there and think I'm going to kill ducks. But it can be done. There are people killing them today.
That river is one big lake now. That tucker's not supposed to crest until the 15th, what I saw the other day. I was looking at it after you posted that video or that picture. Man, when is that thing finally going to hit and crest, you know, and fall back down? Usually this time of year, it'll come up fast. It'll go down fast.
Right.
But it's not supposed
and
to
I think
crest
it, when it starts
15th.
Down, at least the area I hunt, and I look at the Caruthersville gauge for most of the places I hunt, and when it falls, I think it's supposed to fall like 10 feet in 36 hours. And to tell you, that blind that I filmed that little video from, the duck report, it's under, now this is 4 miles from the river, and the blind is about, I don't know, 10 feet, the top of it normally would be about 10 feet off the water. You know, it's just a huge field blind. It's actually an old cotton trailer built, made into a blind. And right now, the top of it's probably under 5 feet of water. And odds are, without river dropping that fast, we're going to basically have to redo that whole blind to make it huntable when the river drops back out. The roof will be gone if it's like normal when this happens. The roof will be gone. You know, there'll be issues with the brush. It's a mess in that bottom, but it's going to drop fast when it drops, from what they're saying right now.
Yeah. Usually when it comes up this fast or gets this high during the winter, it drops out really quick.
Yeah.
Usually have a cold front come through and freezes everything up north. You have less runoff, but man, at the rain on top of it being warm all winter. Could we ask or get any more rain this winter?
Well, and what we, again, just like weather, we generally don't look at what's happened north of us. And I saw, and I can't remember if anybody's shared it on Duck South or not, but it was a hydrology report of what the water is like. And this was in late December, and it was for the month of December, so showing how much water was in different areas. North of us was record water in December, all December. So there's water everywhere. It's not just here. It's all the way up to, you know, northern Illinois and those areas. My place in Arkansas that I keep also on my weather app, so I have three clicks. I have St. Louis, I have my place in Arkansas, and then I have home. And those are the places I generally look, can quickly click and see what's happening. There hadn't been a week this season that when I click on McCrory, Arkansas, the first thing on the top of that page on my NOAA app is a red bar that says flood watch. All season long, never failed. Every day. I've gotten so used to it, I don't even notice it.
Well,
that's crazy to think.
And when you have this enormous amount of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've spent a whole podcast talking about what could happen when the water. I don't think people understand, once you get past about Missouri, how much land is inside the levees of the Mississippi River. And once it comes up out of those natural banks, how many thousands, maybe millions of acres, all the way down.
Square miles. I mean, you're talking thousands of square miles of water right now.
And enormous amounts of food. You put that on top of what's already outside the levees, man, what few ducks you do have, it spreads them out everywhere.
Well, and a lot of people in other places don't realize, and I don't know how it is there, but we have bean fields all over this region that weren't cut this year because it was too wet to get in them. And now those are covered with water. So there's, God almighty, the food that's available that no one meant to have available for birds. And like we've said, it goes all the way north. One of the things we're concerned with right now, or should be as duck hunters, is the light snow they've had in Canada in the breeding grounds. And we really, that's where, forget migration at this point in the season. We all ought to be pulling for a lot of snow in Canada, because that's what really fills up the potholes and makes it possible for them to nest and breed and pull it off well. Rain rolls off. You know, snow melts at the right time to fill them up, and also tends to keep the farmers out of the fields for a little bit of time, and it gives those ducks a break. We're going to send a lot of ducks back to Canada in good condition this year, because Lord knows they have, you know, no pressure on them and all the food in the world. But obviously, if we don't have good potholes from the snow runoff.
Exactly.
But if we have that, I could see a banner year next year. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Oh, yeah. And that's how
I tell my friends in Louisiana all the time, man, I am pulling for y'all to get a huge migration, because my favorite ducks to shoot are the ducks coming from the south in January. It's awesome when that happens. So hopefully we're going to get a good breeding year, and then we'll get a bunch of young ducks, and next year will be a good migration. But the snow, lack of snow in Canada, is pretty concerning right now.
In the short term, I know it sucks. I know that everybody that's listening to this, it sucks to have a season like this. But just like in marriage, when you lived in a one-bedroom apartment when you first got married, and you now you're living in a four-bedroom house, got plenty to eat all the time. When next year, you're sitting in the blind, and those wads of 30, 40 are falling through the trees, think back. Because that makes you appreciate those moments.
Right.
You think back. It may seem rough in the short term, but in the long term, it's for the better. All things work for the better. Even in duck hunting. May not be understandable now, but it does.
Sure. Yeah, it's a, you know, none of us like it. But it will turn. Now we can't control the weather. And, you know, if people want to, number one, if you want to make a difference, there are a lot of good real conservation organizations who are out there to make a difference. And you know, whether it's DU, Delta, National Wildlife Federation, and Vanishing Paradise, we can go through and name a bunch. There are a bunch of good ones, you know. Join those and do what you can to support them, even if it's volunteering, and volunteering's awesome, by the way. And then start really looking at things such as ethanol. We want to see something that's causing a whole lot of ground to be planted in corn. You know, I forget what the numbers were I saw the other day, but like 68 million acres of corn planted and harvested in the U.S., and a huge amount of that was for ethanol, and with about, 3 to 5% waste is what is average nationwide.
It's a few fields with corn in them. It's about 1 to 3 now. It's about 1 to 3 on the combines. Yeah, 1 to 3%.
That's still
even on
almost 70 million acres covered with waste grain.
Yeah, I mean, my thinking is on 200 bushel corn, which is usually the average in the Midwest, even if you had a extreme loss of 3%, that's 6 bushels, that's 300 pounds an acre. A duck won't leave a property till it gets below 27 pounds.
Gotcha.
27 pounds of food per acre.
So you know,
that's
ethanol
lot.
It's killing my boat engines, it's killing my chainsaw engines, it's killing your ATVs if you aren't careful. It's slowly killing your car, whether you want to admit it or not. And it's been, I know it's been a boon for a lot of farmers, so I hate getting into this, but it ain't been good for ducks. It's put a lot of land into cultivation it probably shouldn't have been, just like the soybean subsidies of the 70s.
Exactly.
In the long run, it has hurt us, and it's not a good fuel. We all know it. So, you know, if you get a chance to speak up and oppose that, do it. You know, there's a lot of stuff you can get involved in that will make a difference, and that there's science that says it's the right thing to do. And I would encourage everyone out there, you've had a bad season, find a way to make a difference. It's not griping about hunters north of you. I promise you it's not. That's not going to make a difference. It just alienates each other, because it's really not what's causing your problems. We can't change the weather. It's going to be what it is. But Nash Buckingham, I think it was in the 30s, he had a season where he shot two ducks in the southern Mississippi flyway.
Most famous duck hunter ever.
It was a warm, wet year. They didn't make it. Always happened.
We need to create a fake Nash Buckingham social media account. Complain about it. Hey, I want to close out. I want to close out on this one, Bill. Let me preface this by saying this. Anonymous source. I hate anonymous sources, especially when it concerns government. You know, you just call it what it is. It's a leak. But in what I'm about to say, I'm not going to say the guy's name, and I backed it up with two or three other people from what he told me. An anonymous source said that in Canada this past year, that it was the least amount of ducks they'd ever seen in all the years of going up there. And this was somebody that spent the whole outfitting season up there. And they were driving hundreds of miles. What used to be 40, 50 miles of scouting, that turned into 200-300 miles through a wild black helicopter. The duck numbers be wrong.
I don't think the numbers, the only thing I could say that is possibly at issue with duck numbers is whether or not we're better at counting now with modern technology, et cetera, than we were, say, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. So maybe there's some, it's like losing something in translation, where today we really see a million ducks, and then, you know, in 1958, they saw, you know, 780,000, and just somehow through the technology or whatever being different, they didn't get the same estimates, but they had more ducks. But I think the counts are right. Generally, what you see in Canada, in my experience and from what I understand from others, you talk about a place that habitat is everything. You get into an area where the potholes, too many of them have dried up or been drained or whatever. And this has happened a lot over the last, you know, 30 years when we've had water, it seems, almost every year up there, which has led to these 60-day seasons. Too much water, if the pothole stays full too many years in a row, it becomes unproductive. So if your area, because of the weather, whether it's the last year or the last 5 years, and it's finally just caught up with itself, it may not attract those birds that it did. They may not be there like they were. But you could go 300 miles east or west or north or south, and they got the right weather. They got the right stuff, and they're loaded up. I think because other people had great years in Canada, but we knew this year was going to be tougher than normal just because we didn't have a great hatch. Fewer young ducks in the hatch than most years. The numbers were good, but they're mature ducks, and mature ducks are tough.
Well, if there's one beast of the waterfowl population that should mass reproduce year in and year out, it's a snow goose. I'll give you a little report from people that are really, really watching the snow geese. The hatch must have been awful, because most of what they're seeing are adult snow geese. There's not many juvies. Juvies are what you're after when you're snow goose hunting.
Yeah.
Juvenile snow geese. They're easy to decoy, and like I said, most of the stuff that these guys are scouting now hunting a little bit now, or adult birds. They are hard to kill. So
right.
The hatch, you definitely know that that's backed up by sight. You're seeing it in the Snokies.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing that they didn't have the hatch this year. And I know that they nest way further than north than the ducks, you know, a good bit north. But the hatch, even for them, was awful.
Mm-hmm. It was, and I read those reports early in the year before even people were hunting them much, and, you know, the biologists were saying it's going to be tough. But that's fine. Snow geese need to be trimmed down. Yeah, you love juvies for hunting, but let's face it, a bad breeding season on snows isn't necessarily a disaster ecologically. I'm sometimes surprised we haven't had pushback on the conservation order, since it's really my understanding, and somebody may bring up something and prove me totally wrong, and that's fine. About all we've done is somewhat keep the population from continuing unfettered growth.
That's exactly right.
So I'm kind of surprised no groups have really come on strong and said, you know, let's stop this hunting stuff and let's do something real, some real controls with poison or whatever. You know, there are a lot of ways to do it. And some of them would probably want a spay and neuter program, but.
Oh, that's a great note to you, though. But I agree with you when you said, is technology better to do the counts today? Yes. Yes. But it's a tough year. Can't argue that. Everybody's having a tough season. But like I said, when next year you're sitting in the blind and those wads of 30, 40 are falling through the trees, think back. Because that makes you appreciate those moments. As you look at your buddy and you laugh, the high fives. That's what today is what makes you appreciate those moments.
Absolutely.
So, Bill, we did not get anywhere where I thought we were going to get today. That's okay. Great conversation as always. Dude, I love having you on this podcast as an expert to talk about these kind of things, because surely from an intellectual level, I need help.
Well, we all do. We all have a lot of different experiences to bring out, and that goes for everyone listening too. Everyone has some expertise to offer and some background to bring to the foreground. So speak up.
Bill, I appreciate it. I enjoy our Wednesdays. I hate that the holidays fell right in the middle of usually when we do our podcast, but I enjoyed it today. Thank you for being here again. We'll get together over the next couple of weeks. I know you got a lot of travel, but we will do it before or after Wednesday. So
I look forward to it.
Bill, thank you again. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.